I have never in my life had to go and ask a theater employee, because I, when I turned around, there was not even a sign of recognition on their face that I existed. And that I was like turned around, like they're like three rows back, and I like there's nobody else in this theater. I turn around and I'm like staring at them, like they didn't even look at me. So I got up, walked out, said like, "All right, these women won't shut up."
Mm-hmm.
When the guy went and talked to them, okay, he, you know, like I said, like there's not really many people in there. They'll know I complained. They'll, you know, I don't care. Fine, whatever. Goes in and talks to them. One says to the other, "I didn't even know there was other people in this theater. We weren't being that loud." I'm like, fucking shoot me.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Bri Guy and His Super Friends. Brian is yet again not here this time. I will be one of your co-hosts. This is Josh Zorich, and with me is my partner in crime, insert witty intro here, Mike Bradley.
Partner in crime was good enough. You could have stopped. It was fine. But also, Brian, he's the Invisible Man. He's, you know, that was a horror movie at one time. He's here. He's just,
yeah, that
he's
works.
Also the Quiet Man. That was a John Wayne movie at one time. He's named Michelino Flynn in that movie.
I want to see the crossover. I want to see the crossover. We have this all this AI now. Someone make me the crossover of John Wayne from the Quiet Man, somehow like terrorized by the Invisible Man. That's what I want.
You know, I wish I had a John Wayne impression that I did, that I had practiced doing.
Don't even
him saying
it,
like
right now.
Why don't you make yourself visible there, Pilgrim?
Beautiful. Love it.
That's all I've got. I have nothing. And that's horrible. I don't have a John Wayne impression. I don't do it. But yeah, that would be interesting.
Since Brian is not joining us today by voice, at least, I think you guys know what that means. Mike and I are back for our... and the title is always evolving. The semi-annual spooktacular jamboree roundup.
That's all right. That's what we're calling it. This is news to me. This is my first time hearing that specific title.
I just came up with it.
I like it. That's the name of the episode right there. We're gonna have to make sure it's titled that when it gets posted.
Yep, clip it out. It'll probably change if I refer to this again while we're talking. It'll probably come out as something different.
And it will definitely be different next time.
Oh, absolutely. I think every time there's a social media post regarding this or referencing any past episodes, it's different every time because I never keep it constant and I never care to look back to find out what I called it before.
That's the branding. It's different every time.
That's the branding is that it has no constant branding.
That actually sounds like a podcast I want to make now. Just call it It's Different Every Time. And it can be like Seinfeld. It's a show about nothing, you know. It's different every time.
It could work.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, listeners, if this is your first rodeo to these types of episodes here on Super Friends, Mike and I are sort of the resident horror heads in the group. A lot of the time, if we discuss things, we'll get some chime in from Andy and even Ian at times. But normally, giving you your periodic update throughout the year, it's typically just the two of us. What we normally do is we catch you up on what we talked about in the last time that we did this. We let you know whether we've seen any of those projects that we talked about, and we try to give you a quick rating on them. We don't really get into much detail on it because the meat of the episode is telling you what's upcoming, what is out now, what is on the cusp of releasing, and what to maybe keep your eye on for the next couple of months. The last couple of times, I'll give you the reference because we will be talking about some projects that we have previously talked about. If you want to find out more about these, you could grab episode 274 from September 11th, 2022. Yes, we're going to talk about one even from that long ago. And then our most recent episode was number 288 from May 23rd of this year, 2023. And to kick things off, we're just going to jump right into it. How do you feel about that?
Sure, let's do it.
Gravy. So what we're going to do, as I said, we're going to talk about the projects that were discussed on previous episodes. We're going to let you know whether each of us have seen it and give it a quick yes or no on whether we recommend that you spend your time and life energy viewing these things. Any detail about them, plot, broader feelings, we'll try to keep to a minimum just so we can get through them. And you guys can hear, you know, a deeper discussion about them on those prior episodes we discussed. So the one that we have to talk about going back to September of 2022 is something I finally got around to a week ago, which was a prequel to the 2009 movie Orphan. It was released in 2022. It's called Orphan First Kill. And this brings back the original actress who plays the main character. Her name is Isabella Furman, I believe. And she plays the main character. She played it when she was about 10 years old in Orphan in 2009. And then she comes back to play the same character so many years later in Orphan First Kill. So as I said, I finally got around to seeing this. Mike, the last time we had talked in May, neither of us had viewed this. Have you since also seen Orphan First Kill?
Yeah, actually I have. I believe last time I had not seen either of the Orphan movies.
Okay.
So I went out of my way to watch both because I wanted to watch the new one, and I didn't really want to go in not having seen the first one. So, yeah, I went back and checked that out.
Good, good. Yeah, and I think this is one, even though it's a prequel, the way that they're made, you know, because of the order in which they were released, I think this is one of those times where you do want to see the order of release. You want to watch that first one from 2009 and then view the prequel, even though chronologically the prequel comes first, technically. I think it's a better viewing in release order. So how did you feel about it? Yes or no? Would you suggest people see this?
Yeah, I would say it's worth a watch if you're into horror. You know, I mean, that's the little context, I guess, for all of these is if you're into horror, these are these recommendations. If you're not into horror, I don't think you need to watch this. There are some horror movies I would recommend to people that aren't into the genre.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to care about this if you're not into horror. But if you're into it, this is 100% worth a watch. And yes, the order of release is the way to watch. The prequel does rely on knowledge from the original film to add some tension. That's the most I would say. You know, I mean, you have to have some knowledge of what happened for all of the things they do in the second movie to work best. So
yeah, that's a good.
Yes, I would recommend it. It's, you know, like we've done rating systems before and we're going with recommendation. And in this case, I would say, you know, maybe we go with strongly versus just normally versus strongly, you know, like I would say this is just a standard recommendation. Like, I don't think it's amazing, but it's a good watch.
Yeah. I as I said, I did finally see it myself. I am also putting it on the recommendation side. I would say, just as a quick review / thoughts, we were about 50 minutes into the movie, and all I kept thinking was, this is exactly like the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, almost, I don't want to say beat for beat, but the things that they walk you through in the first film, it's like they copy them for the first 45 to 50 minutes of the movie. And I've seen lazy sequels and prequels that do that a lot. And then, about the 50-minute mark, this movie took a hard left turn where I literally sat up in attention. And said to my wife Sarah, like, "Oh, now I'm interested. Okay, I did not see this coming whatsoever, and I was actually almost like preparing myself to trash this a little bit leading up to this discussion. And then, yeah, so I would say if you watch the first movie and then you decide we're going to check out First Kill, bear with it for the first act and a half. Because once you get about halfway through, it will become nothing like you thought it was about to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And to me, I was actually impressed with it in one specific way. And that's they're taking somebody that played the part of a little girl when she was a little girl, and they're having her do it now as an adult playing a younger little girl than she had the first time.
Right.
And it worked. They did a really good job of taking somebody that was meant to look like a 10-year-old girl when she was a 10-year-old girl and taking an adult. I don't know how old she would be, 23, 24,
early
20s like that,
now, yeah.
And turning and making her look like that same little girl again. That was really good work, because that for me is part of the reason that I thought it wouldn't work, and part of the reason I wasn't as interested in the series. I was like, this is a grown woman playing a 10-year-old. Like, this isn't going to fly. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Turns out it did work.
Right. It worked. And there's an extra element of the story that we're going to keep spoiler free that actually adds another layer to that, that magic and that, accomplishment. That if you haven't seen them, or if you do know at least the first movie already, you know what we mean. So yeah, I agree with Mike that what they achieved with the believability in the age of the actress versus the age of the character, it was pretty well done.
Agreed.
So yeah, so we can finally, I think for the two of us, we can finally check that last one off from our discussion from a year ago, at least in terms of things that were available for us to consume. So moving on, this is actually, so the next one we're going to talk about, guys, we kind of both have to apologize because in getting ready to record today, we both realized that other than, the sort of full group discussions around like anticipated movies of the year and whatnot, we left this off of both of the last two episodes, of the Roundup Jamboree. And, I think we're both happy to talk about it for just a second. This was April 14th. We got the Nicolas Cage vampire movie Renfield. And Mike, I presume you saw this.
Yes, absolutely. I did as well.
Oh, we did too. And real quick, what did you think? What would you say to people?
I mean, Nicolas Cage is a little bit of a polarizing figure for a lot of moviegoers. I understand that. If you don't like Nicolas Cage, this movie's not going to change your mind. If you do like Nicolas Cage, you've probably already seen this because it's Nicolas Cage playing fucking Dracula. How you're not like this is just one of those dream scenarios where it's like if you like what he does and you appreciate him for what he is, it's going to work for you. Do I think this is great? No. Was I hoping it would be better? Kinda, yeah. Was it still good? And would I recommend it? Absolutely. And something I would say, you know, we're going to talk about another Nicolas Cage movie here shortly. And what I would say that personally that I take from this movie and a lot of what we've been seeing lately is Nicolas Cage has had a bit of a turn in his career. The last few years, where he has started embracing what he does, embracing what he is and his image. He has embraced it and said, you know what? I'm going to play the ridiculous over-the-top characters because it's what I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he stopped taking on as many dramatic roles and roles in movies that it was just like, why is Nicolas Cage in that? Yeah, I mean, how many movies have come out where you're like, man, like, over the last 15 years, there's a lot of movies that I've seen that have Nicolas Cage in them that, one, have no business having somebody as big as Nicolas Cage in them, and two, it's like, boy, what the hell's he doing? You know, why is he taking on these kinds of roles? Like, let him be Nicolas Cage, and he's fantastic. I think when he tries to be a more serious actor, he doesn't do very well with it. And I think that has skewed people's opinion of him to where, like, I enjoy Nicolas Cage for the over-the-top stuff that he does. This movie does not disappoint on that at all. So
yeah, no, I agree. And I would say, to your point of people characterizing it as, you know, if you don't like Nicolas Cage very much, will this change your mind? Yeah, probably not. But I also think there's a lot of enjoyment still to be had from it, even for that reason. So it goes on my recommendation list as well. I think Nicholas Hoult does a fantastic job. Just the rest of the supporting cast works really well together. And yeah, I in a weird way, I think Nicolas Cage was given more to do in this than I anticipated, and he did better with it than I also thought. Like, he and the director kept himself reined in to the degree that he didn't cage too much. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, look at, this is Nicolas Cage playing Dracula. And he's seriously trying to play Dracula. And I think it worked really well. I'm looking forward to rewatching this several times.
Yeah, I own it. So I did buy it on Amazon when it was an option.
There you go.
It's really fun. That's what I would say about this movie, is it's a lot of fun. I don't want to spoil anything. This is a fairly new movie. You're going to have fun if you watch it. If you hate Nicolas Cage, you'll still have fun. But
I agree. You know. So from there, we can move actually to one of the first things that we legitimately talked about in the most recent episode back in May. This was yet another remake of a Stephen King story, if I remember. This is called The Boogeyman, and this had a June 2nd theatrical release. I had actually intended to get around to this, but I didn't get a chance. So this is a no for me, so I can't really weigh in on it. But Mike, did you get to this?
I did.
Oh, okay, great. Fill me in a little bit just for a second and tell me, should I bother?
We went to see this like opening weekend at the theater. This was something that, you know, I mean, DeSmalchin's there as a main role in this movie. And the content they put together, man, I gotta tell you, I was really impressed with this movie. This
was
really, really, really good. And this is, I think we had discussed before the show started, about the idea that there's people that are into horror and there's people that aren't.
Yeah.
And that, you know, recommended versus not recommended is kind of different. And rating movies based on, rating horror movies on a scale of 1 to 10 is kind of difficult because most horror movies come in that range of, like, for a horror movie, it's a 9, but for a just any movie as a film critic, it's a 5. You know, like, it goes that way very often. I would, as just a movie, you know, not looking at it as a horror movie, looking at just a movie, I'd give this an 8. Which, for a horror movie, puts it in that 9.5 to 10 range of what they're doing. Because they tried to do more than just be a horror movie. They didn't stick to just casual tropes. They actually put some work in. They got somebody. Let's face it. David DeSmalchin. Dude can play somebody with some mental health problems incredibly well. That's kind of where he got his start. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At least from most people knowing him, was in The Dark Knight playing whatever the character's name was that was mentally ill.
Just the guard, yeah.
Well, yeah, he was a mentally ill patient that escaped from Arkham, you know, and he does the same sort of thing here. I'm sorry, I don't want to say it that way. He's not doing that same kind of character. He's playing somebody that is dealing with loss. Like, I think the synopsis of the film, if you just read like a summary, tells you that, like, it's the story of a man trying to figure out how his children had died. And so he's playing somebody that maybe wasn't mentally ill, that went through this extreme loss and is now having a lot of mental issues. And I gotta tell you, they knocked this one out of the park. As far as what they were trying to do and what they managed to do, I was extremely impressed. And, you know, you're talking about a movie that doesn't have a big-name star, doesn't have a big-name director, writer, anything like that attached to it. I mean, Stephen King, yes. But as far as the movie-making part goes, man, I actually need to go and find this Stephen King book, novella, whatever it was, and read it. Because I think I had talked before and sung my praises of Smile for its excellent presentation of somebody dealing with mental health and an accurate real-life representation of that, which so many movies go over the top and get wrong, and it's actually somewhat insulting to people with mental health problems, where Smile did it correctly, so does this movie. And I guess the difference for me in this one is this one was actually scary, too. It did a good job at actually doing that, where I don't feel like Smile was actually scared me. I just think Smile did such a good job with everything else. This movie built the tension. It had, you know, those, it had jump scares, it had tension building, it had a lot going for it. So yeah, if you're into horror, don't miss this one. If you're not into horror, you're still gonna find some value here.
Very cool. I was definitely not expecting of course that high of praise from this, but let alone just that much contribution from it. I thought it was, yeah, I figured it would have been limited remarks because
sorry, that's I will no it's some things.
No, it's surprising, but that's it's a great recommendation.
I mean, to be fair, the last time we got a movie called The Boogeyman, I believe it would have been about the time you and I would have been in college ish age, and that one's a firm zero, at least for me. That's a horrible movie, so anticipating something coming out with the same name, even though it's not based on the same thing at all, yeah, I can see that. It's a daring title for a movie to take on. Even if it's from a Stephen King work, it is, you know, The Boogeyman is kind of a, you know, thing, I guess.
Right.
I'm losing the term that I should use for it.
I mean, it just seems so overly generic that it's like, how what special could they possibly do with this?
Right. And they managed it. So
good to know.
Get out there, see that one for sure.
Absolutely. Adding it to the list right now. Next on the rundown was a Netflix movie that was added to their streaming service on June 28th. It is called Run, Rabbit, Run. This was another that I have not got around to yet. How about yourself?
I have not either. I don't currently have a Netflix subscription, so I have not kept up on that. Kind of just waiting until Stranger Things comes back, and then I'll sign up for a month, watch a whole bunch of shit that I've missed, and then not watch anymore again.
That is fair. Since we are going to skip over this one, basically, again, head back to the last episode from May if you want to hear a little bit more meat about that to understand what it may be and see if it interests you. But with that, we can just scoot right along to the next. I'm happy to get to this one. This is Insidious, The Red Door, which released in theaters on July 7th. This was the fifth movie in the Insidious series. And I feel like it's been a minute. It's been a couple of years since we've visited this universe, and this was the first one, well, not only the first of this franchise, but actually the complete career directing debut by Patrick Wilson. So I will say off the bat, I saw it, I enjoyed it, I was really happy to see what they were able to do with revisiting the core family from the first two films. Almost in real time. There's a bit of fudging on the timeline and the age of both the characters and the actors. So there's a little bit of disbelief enough, you have to have, but it's acceptable. But I think I really dug what they did, and I appreciated what they avoided doing, if that makes sense. What were your feelings?
It was okay. What I came away from it. Like, it's a well-made movie. You know what I mean? Like, the structure and everything. I feel like they told more of a story and failed to capture horror. I would qualify this more as suspense. In my own personal opinion, there was not a lot of true horror for me going on there. In other words, like, a lot of the stuff that you've come to expect from Insidious, I feel like was kind of missing.
Okay. So not to split hairs on the genre, but maybe more along the lines of like a paranormal thriller, paranormal suspense, supernatural thriller, something like that. Not really crossing the fence into horror.
Right. A lot of the themes and things that they did, I enjoyed. It felt a little too long. I think was one of the drawbacks for me. Like, it dragged at times. Like, it got really slow during portions. And I guess for me in general, the story that they were telling, because of the route they went and how the story is told, I don't know that we needed this story. I understand, like, again, without spoiling anything, I understand what they were doing, and I understand why. I just don't know that it was necessary. Like, don't get me wrong, like, the last couple Insidious movies have been woof. Just not great, in my own opinion. Whatever the last one was, the key, whatever, the one with the key.
The last key?
Maybe.
I think it would have been the last key.
That was really not good. The okay. third one was kind of not good, but still okay. This one brings it back to more what the first two were. You know, I mean, in terms of quality of the filmmaking and things making sense and wrapping up, and you know what I mean? Like, in terms of like being a complete movie. And I'd say it's better than three, but it's not as good as the first two.
Okay, that's fair.
That's the way I would look at this. So that can be your expectations going into this one.
Right on. And if you don't particularly end up liking this, you have four others in the franchise to pick from.
Well, to be fair, how would you put it? Do you feel the same? Like, better than three and four, not as good as one and two? Or, I mean, that's where I am. Like, I would go 1, 2, 5, 3, and then just throw 4 in the trash, personally.
probably not that harsh on 4, but I see, like, 3, they tried to create a prequel to 1 and 2, so you have this completely different set of characters, basically, that you're living with.
I feel like they just wanted to use Lin Shaye more.
Yeah, yeah.
So they made it a prequel.
And have something to do there.
Yeah.
And they knew that, I think there was such a good reception for the core family that doing something that seemed like it was continuing the story without them is what they tried to stay away from.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, probably maybe kind of rank it in that order, but not, I don't think I view 4 as harshly as that.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. But like I said, in a franchise of 5 movies, there's got to be something there for you to like, probably, for everybody.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So moving on, this one. Okay, I'll just give you the preface. So the next movie is called Cobweb. It stars Lizzie Kaplan and Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander in The Boys on Amazon Prime. And this was something I really tried to keep my eyes out for. I think it was at one of the AMC theaters that's further away from us. It's a bigger one, so they have more auditoriums, they can play more stuff. I think it was there for a week, and I missed it. When we talked about it a few months ago, I feel like you sold me on it in a way. I think you were the one that presented this, and I didn't get around to it, but I wanted to. But I did you have a chance? Did you? I mean, because it felt like it was there and gone.
Yeah, at the theater, I didn't even see it on a theater list around me once. Like, I live further into the middle of nowhere than you. You actually live in the city. I do not. So I don't get as many options for lesser known movies popping up nearby.
Yeah.
This one is something I have not yet watched. It's on a list of several horror movies that we have to watch at home during the upcoming, you know, Halloween season is officially here as of Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
I can say it's October, so now it's time for horror movies to start being watched, and we have a good backlog built up because Amy's been in school again, and actually October 1st is her last day, so we have...
Perfect.
Quite a number that we're going to rent or go and watch or, you know, whatever, find a way that we've kind of built up a little bit of a backlog over the last couple months to do that.
Yeah.
So it is one that is in those plans and probably will be the first one that we go to because we both kind of have been chomping at the bit to watch it because it sounds like a really interesting story to take on. And it's probably going to be, I mean, he's good. And Lizzie Kaplan, I feel like she's all right. Like, I've never really disliked or really loved her role in anything. Like, I feel like she's been there and she's been good. Speaking of, I mean, right behind you there, I can see. The listeners can't see the Cloverfield thing behind you. But since we're talking about Lizzie Kaplan, if you don't know who she is, she would be in Cloverfield. But yeah, I feel like I'm interested to see what he does based on the synopsis of the movie, which kind of painted maybe an abusive father type role for him, possibly. And I feel like, man, without superpowers, is he going to be as threatening as an abusive character? Because that's really what he already plays as Homelander, is a, you know, sociopathic, abusive person. So we know he can pull off the role. So I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, and that, it's that kind of talk that on the previous episode got me on board for this. And then, like I said, it just kind of came and went. I think I have this on a request list from our local library. So I'll just wait in the queue for it to be available, but hopefully get to it at some point. The next, I think we actually do have a little bit to offer. This is Sympathy for the Devil. A sort of, in my opinion, out of nowhere, again, Nicolas Cage starring movie along with Joel Kinnaman, who I ride hard for. I really think he's a shining star in most of what he does, especially the Suicide Squad movies and the first season of Altered Carbon on Netflix. I think he was really good in that, along with other things. But I did not get to Sympathy for the Devil, but Mike, I have a feeling you did.
Indeed, I did. This movie is, it's a thinker. That's, I would 100% recommend this movie to anybody, horror fan or not. I would recommend you watch this. I'm not going to talk about it on a scale of 10, because I would say your personal experience and how you feel about the movie is, I hate to sound this way, but it's going to be like, how much of it do you get by the end of it? How much of it did you catch? How much of it did you get? And did you put together all the little pieces along the way? And it is much more of a thinker than I thought it was going to be. The premise is pretty simple. You know, Joel Kinnaman is somebody who gets carjacked by Nicolas Cage's character, and it goes from there. Why is it called Sympathy for the Devil? Why is Nicolas Cage dressed in a red suit with red dyed hair? You know, these are things you're left to figure out for yourself, that I'm not going to spoil any of, but that's what you see in the promotions for the movie.
Okay.
I guess, like, the promotions for the movie, you're painting this as Nicolas Cage playing the devil. I mean, that's what the promotions for the movie seem to be hinting towards. And again, you're getting Nicolas Cage in another over-the-top role. which he's playing a character that Nicolas Cage is already known to play, whether he's playing it or not. And this time he's supposed to be playing it, so it works, as opposed to him, you know, going over the top in a role that it makes no sense for him to go over the top in.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed this. Again, Joel Kinnaman is fantastic. And yeah, you know, it may be a bit cliche given that it's a movie that takes place largely in a car. But be ready for a bumpy ride. It's It's a fun ride and it's a bumpy ride. So it feels like a movie to me. This is I think the way that I would put it. This feels like a movie to me that may have been an early 2000s thriller.
Okay.
And in this case, I think we hit again on something that doesn't belong in the horror genre.
All right.
And I will say firmly, this is not a horror movie. We're talking about it now because we talked about it before when there wasn't as much information about it out there.
Sure.
This isn't a horror movie. At least, this is a thriller. Like, that's where I would put this. This is a thriller. It's 100% a thriller. And it's 100% worth watching. It's worth your, I don't know, it's like 90-some minutes. It's not even necessarily a very long movie. Mm-hmm. And it's a good time you'll have with it.
Awesome.
If you like that kind of movie. If you like thinkers, let's say. Yeah. A movie that makes you think, you'll like it.
Amazing. Yep, I already got that added to the request list as well. Looking forward to this one. All right, well, moving on. We have a few more that we can weigh in on that we actually had the opportunity to see. We did talk about a movie called Talk to Me, which released at the end of July. I did get to this. I would say I would recommend it, but not strongly. I felt it was predictable at sometimes, a bit formulaic, but also a few moments that sort of surprise you. I don't know if the difference in that is that it is it's an Australian film. It's either an Australian or New Zealand film.
Is that based on the accents of the people in the movie?
Oh, very much.
Okay.
Everybody is. It's not like, oh, the main character seems to be, so therefore.
You know, once I was told how to tell the difference, by the way, when you're listening to them, a while ago, very, I guess apropos, considering that we're talking about horror, a while ago I served on a jury in a murder trial, of all things. On the jury was a man from New Zealand that taught me how to tell the difference between the two is to ask them to say fish and chips.
Okay. And
he said, you know, what you're listening for there is the difference between a someone from New Zealand would be very muted on their vowels for that. It'd be more fush and chips, where they'd like the I's going to come out almost like a U, like fush and chips. Whereas somebody from Australia is going to say fish and chips. It's going to be a long I. It's going to be like, you know, they're going to say fish and chips. And it was interesting, and it was also very helpful to have something so simple to listen for in how people talk to be able to tell the difference between the two. And it's just that simple of listening to their vowels.
So in that regard, I can't recall certain words and how they were pronounced to definitely say whether it was one or the other. But
not in this moment, but if you watched it again, you might be able to now.
Yeah, possibly. And I'll put an ear to that. I'm going to guess that this was, I don't know if this was A24 or if it was something else. I think it was something else, but it was, I feel like this was one of those movies that they did, you know, production and testing, and just somebody in the industry along the way said, you know, I think we can find an American audience for this. And so it made its way over, which is fine. Nothing wrong with it. I don't think it was like a straight, you know, American studio made movie, for Americans per se. there's really nothing about, like, you know, the Australian or New Zealand culture or anything that you need to know to understand anything, any, you know, by any means. But
so there's not kangaroos running around.
I mean, in the most stereotypical sense, no, there's not. You know, it doesn't. There's nothing really founded in it that if you didn't know that going in, that you would be lost in terms of context for certain things whatsoever.
So it's just the accents people are talking with. It's different exactly than any American movie. Okay.
Yeah. That's all. So yeah, I would say give it a chance. I heard they are going to make a sequel. I could see it potentially being interesting. I could also see it being really pointless and unneeded and bad. It just depends on where they want to take the story. But in terms of this, give it an hour and a half. It's not too bad.
And if you couldn't tell, I have not seen this one yet. But it is another one that's on that October list for us to watch at home.
Perfect. Well, then all the ones that we're both, that either of us are saying we haven't seen, you might hear on a future episode as we finally get around to them and then can offer our thoughts. We have three more for you. This one I was super excited. This might have been the one out of anything I was most excited to get to this year. This was August 11th's The Last Voyage of the Demeter. I won't say that this blew me away after seeing it, but I appreciated that it was not what it could have been, nor what I expected it to be.
Okay.
And not to say, like, it didn't miss expectations, it just sort of subverted them. And I think especially on a second viewing, it will let me appreciate it more. But it's a Dracula story that we've not seen before. And I think it was, there was a way that they could have done it, which would have been exactly what you thought it would be. And so therefore, you know, it could have been a popcorn movie. That's great. It would entertain you. But the direction they went with it, I think has a good amount of value in it. So I'm going to put it on the recommendation side, but not strongly, but, I did really enjoy it. How about you?
Once again, this is on the list for October.
All right. October list. Story. Perfect. Yeah. Great. Well, then we got two more for you. I actually saw these next two on the same day.
Oppenheimer and Barbie. Holy shit. I didn't know we were going to talk about them today. I wasn't ready. I know you guys have talked about seeing them. I just didn't know it was part of the show.
We did see those.
I mean, Barbie
in fact
was horrifying, and though. So
those are gonna those are gonna come up on a future episode, I'm betting. But we had a planned day off two Fridays ago, and the thing that we took the day off for ended up getting canceled. We didn't need to do it anymore. But we're like, let's just keep the day off. It'll be a nice 3-day weekend. So we decided to go to the movies for the afternoon, and we saw both of these back to back. We're going to start in order of when they were released.
Okay.
First, on September the 8th, we got a sequel to 2018's The Nun, aptly titled The Nun 2. Or if you're being a jackass, The Nun II. And this is yet another film in the Conjuring universe of films. I think... I don't think I'm going to say no on this, but I'm going to give like the weakest yes. And that's not necessarily a reflection on like, oh, the movie sucks. It just didn't leave me as like engaged as other things have. Again, it's an entertaining 90 minutes. And, you know, if you like the genre, I think you'll be okay with it. So that's where I'll leave it.
I mean, I haven't seen it. It's another one for October. Mm-hmm. You know, we like to have a bit of a backlog so that we have stuff, you know, for October to watch at home.
Yeah.
You know, you got to watch the classics and stuff, too, throughout the month. You know, I mean, you got to watch Halloween every year, stuff like that. But, yeah, we like to have a few newer ones. And this one is kind of in the backlog. It was kind of on the, Like, the first one wasn't very good, in my opinion. So I wasn't terribly excited for a sequel. But we did rewatch the first one to be like, was it as bad as we remember?
Fair.
And yeah, it didn't really grab me anymore.
it still didn't move the needle.
No. I mean, yeah. Like, it is, as much, like, I guess Thaisa Farmiga is someone that it's like, I want her projects to work. I think she's pretty good. I just have not yet seen her in something that I felt was a good movie, and I don't understand why.
That's fair. I understand that.
So, and, like, wasn't she in, like, the Walking Dead, like, spinoff as well? Was that her? It was her, somebody that looks a lot like her, was in, like, it was like Fear the Walking Dead or something?
Could have been. I didn't really watch it.
It also wasn't, like, I tried watching it, and I don't even think I finished it the first season, because I was like, so it's, I just keep hoping stuff that she's in is going to do well, and it just doesn't, for whatever reason. I don't think it's her fault, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like,
not
to go on a tangent about that necessarily, but in response to that specific kind of comment, I would recommend The Final Girls.
Okay.
Co-star in, and actually even Sarah brought up like a week ago, she said sort of same thing, sort of building our own Halloween season watch list this year. She said we should rewatch The Final Girls. I remember us seeing that a few years ago, and I remember liking it. We should see it again. I actually do think the film itself is kind of original, and it's interesting, but I would say that is one that really showcases her very well.
Okay. And, you know, I was thinking about, I know it's off topic technically.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about like that October movie watch list that all of us horror fans kind of have. We have our go-tos. And it's something that never occurred to me that you can do now. And I think soon, if rumblings are true, you'll be able to do it with two different films.
Okay.
One, you can do it with Halloween, and that is watch the first film three different times in three different movies by three different, you know, production crews. Because you have, like, the original Halloween, of course, and then you have, like, the Rob Zombie one, and then you have the rebooted sequel, but still just called Halloween. So you can do that three different times, and that's pretty cool. And Friday the 13th, you have that one, and you have the remake from 2009 or whatever it was. And there's rumblings of a remake of that coming. And like Friday the 13th, you can not do it, or not Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street can't do it, because you have two, but you don't have a third reset of that yet, which I don't know that I want them to do that without Robert Englund. I don't know that it's going to work unless they can like figure out how to make Ryan Reynolds work as Freddy or something. Which, don't do that. That was a joke. Please. I don't want Ryan Reynolds as Freddy. But, I mean, him as Deadpool, him as Freddy, it's pretty close. It wouldn't work for that reason. But, yeah, I think you might be able to do it with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Possibly. That timeline is so messed up.
Yeah. I know there's at least two first movies in that series as well, but I don't know if any of the others count as a, like, the beginning or whatever counts as a first one, too. I don't know. Right. But, yeah, it's an interesting set. But the Halloween movies always kind of play for us. So that's what made me think of that.
Yeah, we'll keep it in mind and keep our eyes on that. The last on the review list is A Haunting in Venice, which I know was on my anticipated list for this year. It is the third of the modern adaptations of Agatha Christie novels in the Hercule Poirot sort of series of like murder mystery whodunits. The first being Murder on the Orient Express from 2017, I believe, and then Death on the Nile, which had like almost a year and a half to 2 year delay because of COVID. and I think finally was released in early February 22. So there's really only a little over a year and a half between Death on the Nile and A Haunting in Venice. I saw it. I will simply say that I would recommend seeing it, and I will reserve all other commentary for our discussion on our movies of 2023 toward the end of the year, because I have thoughts.
Okay, that's fair. I would also recommend it. And I think some of you will hear a bit of why I'm not going to make a strong opinion on it in this moment. If you listen to the cold open, I'm probably going to include something about my experience with this movie in that cold open. And it's not the movie's fault for why I did not have an enjoyable time. Let's just leave it at that for now, just in case I don't put it in the cold open. You can say it's not the movie's fault. The movie itself, I would just say I liked it better than Death on the Nile.
Okay.
Nowhere near as much as I like Murder on the Orient Express. I think Murder on the Orient Express is, I still think, a good bit better than both of the two that have followed. I think that's okay. What Kenneth Branagh does with a lot of... He has a love for literature that he brings to film so well. You know, I mean, he lovingly recreates these tales just like he did with Shakespeare in the 90s and early 2000s. You know, he was making a lot of Shakespeare recreations then, and now he's doing it with Agatha Christie. And just like then, some of those movies translated, or some of those Shakespeare adaptations translated better to film than others.
Sure.
You know, who can forget Keanu Reeves as Iago? It was... Othello was wonderful. and his telling of... which one was the other one that was really good? It was... I can't remember them all right now. I can't remember which ones he did that were really good, but some of them did not translate quite so well to film in the adaptations he did. And I feel like this one is kind of middling, whereas Death on the Nile, I feel like, didn't translate as well to film as it did as a novel.
Okay.
And I would say this one's kind of middling for me, whereas Murder on the Orient Express, that was fantastic as a movie. I've never read Agatha Christie, though, so I'm just guessing on the translation thing. Shakespeare, yeah. I had read. That's why I kind of use those as the example. But it's worth seeing. If you like murder mysteries, it's worth seeing.
Beautiful.
There's not a lot of movies coming out scratching that itch these days. You've really got these and the Knives Out stuff. And is anything else really doing this right now? I don't think so.
And if they're trying to do it, they're not doing it as well. In my opinion, you've got some super craftsmen doing it pretty well right now. Okay, so that actually, listeners, is the end of what we can give you recommendations on and some feedback on so far. There's there's four other projects that we previously spoke about in one of the last two episodes of the roundup that we either didn't have release details on or just haven't come out yet. So we'll quickly let you know that by the time you hear this, Saw X will have come out. That releases on September the 29th, closely followed by The Exorcist Believer on October the 6th. We are finally getting The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix on October the 12th. Super, super looking forward to that. And Five Nights at Freddy's at the end of the month on October 27th. So rest assured, we will be sharing some thoughts the next time you hear the roundup episode. But that is what we have for you now. So quickly, or as much as he wants to share. What's that? What did we miss?
Cuckoo is also September 29th, same day as Saw X. But that is on Netflix, I believe.
Okay, well, that's a great segue because... previously we had talked about some things that, again, like, we either they've been delayed or we don't really have more details on yet, that I was going to kick it over to Mike to update us on. So do you want to start with Cuckoo? Because that was one that I didn't realize what was happening with it.
All I really have on the update there is that we have a release date of September 29th, and there's any other information about it is in the last episode. And there's trailers out. Obviously, it's coming out in 3 days, so there should be trailers out for It and Saw X. The Exorcist now has a... We had talked last time about an Exorcist movie coming out this year. Now we have both a release date and an actual title. It is called The Exorcist Believer on October 6th. As Josh said, Five Nights at Freddy's is now officially on October 27th. And The Strangers, which is still just titled The Strangers, as far as we can tell, was supposed to have released in August, and it did not. It is now releasing December 22nd of this year, 2023. Will that move again? Will it get finished? With the writer's strike going on, who the hell knows? If that's part of the reason why it got pushed back once, there's nothing I can tell you as far as when that strike's going to end. I don't know if that's why it did or it didn't. But that, right for now, they're saying December 22nd is a release date. A movie that did say the writer's strike, actor strike, is the reason that it has not come out yet. It was They Listen, which we talked about in the last episode. It has not updated a release date. There is no release date as of yet. It is still being made, but it is delayed indefinitely for now. Shelby Oaks is a movie we talked about last time that also has no additional information. Still no release date. Still nothing more than what we had said last time. That one actually is strangely absent of information on the internet, other than what we had already previously mentioned. And one that is seemingly in, from what I can tell reading about it, development hell, is the Salem's Lot reboot, remake. I don't even know. Like, the original movie's old enough that I feel like you can just say movie. You don't even need to call it a remake. The first one was, what, 1978? 79? Something like that it was made.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not looking to be a reincarnation of it. Yes, it's using Stephen King's novel as the basis. But from what I can tell, this one could be a train wreck, because they're talking now what they had for a theatrical release of a Stephen King movie that people know the name of probably is going directly to streaming at some point and will not see a theater.
Got it.
Will that be true? Who knows? We just kind of have to wait and find out until they decide to put out more official information about it. But at this time, all I could find were rumors and rumblings. No official information about if it will actually not see theaters, but it's sounding that way, because it sounds like the development process has not been great for this movie. So, keep your eyes out for it. Sometimes bad movies are still fun to watch. And my anticipation on that one at this point is that people have kind of screened what they've seen and don't want to attach to it, and they're trying to find a publisher or distributor for the movie. That would be my guess at this point on that one, but that's me putting a guess out there. There's no official information. So, and that really is a wrap-up of all the stuff we had talked about before, and where we're at now with those. So I'm going to throw it back to Josh for what is to come of this, what do we call it, the Spooktacular Jamboree season?
Yeah, I think that was
we have
it, sure.
Coming up this year. So, Josh, what do we got coming up?
Well, if you want to look, I want to say look forward to something per se. I mean, The Nun at this point might be leaving theaters soon if you want to try to catch it. I imagine that Haunting in Venice you'll still have a few weeks with. But we're actually going to start this next side of things with a movie that just released this past weekend on September 22nd that I did not hear about at all until I walked into work and saw it playing. And it's called It Lives Inside. From what I can gather, I think that I'm pretty interested in this because, one, it looks a bit like, okay, it might be a possession movie, demonics, demons, spirits, all that kind of stuff. What's setting it aside? Oh, yes. Yeah, very much. And what I think is setting it aside for me that's piquing my interest is that the main character and the main family or predominant culture, or the culture of the predominant characters set forth, are Indian Americans. And to me, this is something that we don't really get and we haven't really seen in a widely released mainstream theatrical American movie, especially of this genre. The star of the movie is a young actress named Megan Suri. The film is directed and co-written by Bishal Dutta, and it is his feature film debut. It looks like there's some shorts credits and some other things there. That's all I really know about it so far, but I think, like I said, my interest is piqued because presenting familiar occurrences, familiar themes in new circumstances is always interesting to me. We've seen plenty of these kinds of films with this basis, but when it feels like one of the reasons I enjoyed the Ms. Marvel show in the way that I did was because there were a lot of quote unquote typical American occurrences and circumstances that were playing out, but you got to see them through the lens of a different culture experiencing them. And how do they react to them? How would they talk about them? They're seeing it literally through a different lens than I am. And I have for my almost 40 years here. And in a different way that's been presented to us as an audience. And I kind of feel the same way about this. So It Lives Inside is in theaters now. Not sure how long it'll stay, but it is available.
Yeah, and for me, watching the trailer for this, it looked interesting. Definitely something I'm going to want to see. And as Josh had said, something that we haven't had a lot of is, at least here, there is foreign language films that you can watch that explore some of the paranormal superstitions of India that are in foreign language films. And I don't actually know of many or any that do that as Indian Americans. You know, I mean, where it's a modern American family dealing with what seemed like from the trailer to be some kind of supernatural something. They don't really get into specifics in the trailer. They do, but it seemed like it was cultural for them in some way, or, you know, religious. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they didn't. There was, like, I think a drawing was the closest you got in terms of, like, a hint of what might be going on. But even that, who knows? But it looks very interesting, and it's something that, because I don't know a lot about, is something I like to take a look at because I like learning about that kind of stuff. It's fun. And even if it's not much of a good learning experience, because horror movies usually aren't the best learning experiences to learn about things, sometimes they can be. They can teach you some interesting stuff that you might not think. I'm interested in this one.
Well, good to know.
More so than the next one on the list. I'll work that as a segue for you.
Well, I'm actually, I think what you think is the next one on the list, I'm actually throwing you a curveball because something that you contributed to the overall list chronologically, it sounds like is going to hit consumption a little bit earlier. And so I'm going to pitch to you to bring us up to speed on this. This is the Chucky TV series is coming back.
Yes, Chucky season 3 is coming back this October. I actually didn't write down the date, but it is starting early October. I want to say 3rd? I'm not certain on that. You'd have to look that up. I pitched this to Josh. I wasn't actually prepared with information for it on myself. So far, 2 seasons in, if you like Chucky, Chucky is a horror icon for a reason. Yeah, the whole Mark Hamill is Chucky thing that they had done was different and all that, but this is not that. This is Brad Dourif voicing Chucky as it should be. And man, they, you know, as much as you might think, like, oh, it's a TV series, this is something you very much would not see on cable. You know, this is more of an HBO Showtime kind of thing. It is gory. It is slasher. It is Chucky being Chucky. You know what I mean? Chucky is not holding back here, if you will. If you enjoy that, this is a good place for you. This series you need to catch up on. It's amazing. I can't wait for season 3. But I don't know. Josh, have you watched the first 2 seasons at all?
I did not. And actually, when you shot this over to me, it really made me remember. Because in the time that you first told me about this last year, about a year ago, season 2 was about to premiere. I barely watched TV. I don't think I had sci-fi at the time. And since then, we've completely canceled cable. So I don't have as easy access to it. It's something I might get around to. But what did you think of season 2? Like when you saw, oh, 3 is coming, did you think it was needed?
So first I'll touch on where to watch it, since okay. It seems like it does. I believe it is Sci-Fi that produces it. Currently, though, you can catch both of the first 2 seasons on Peacock. Which for me, I actually don't have cable either, but
okay.
Comcast with my internet gives me Peacock for free. Even though I just have internet, they're like, here, you can have Peacock. I don't pay for any cable. I don't even have local channels. I would need, you know, rabbit ears if I wanted to get local stuff. So getting Peacock and having access to it is how I personally watch it. Season 3 will not be on Peacock. It'll be on Sci-Fi, and eventually it'll make its way to Peacock. So if you're looking for the new season, it won't be there. You'll have to watch it on Sci-Fi. I personally, since I don't have access to Sci-Fi, will just wait until it shows up on Peacock. As far as season 2 goes, yes, the series is continuing. Yeah, I mean, the second season was written with the intent for there to be a third season. Like, it was not wrapped up in a nice, neat little ball where it's like, okay, it's over. You know what I mean? Like, there's definitely more to have happen.
Okay.
Without spoiling anything, yes, there's more to come from a continuing storyline. It's not going to be a reboot or anything like that. Something that maybe can draw in, I don't know, what are your opinions on Chucky, Josh? How do you feel about the Child's Play in Chucky in general? Because it was Child's Play for a while, then it became like Curse of Chucky, Bride of Chucky. So it's really Chucky as a whole. How do you feel?
Probably like the first 2 are okay. I think like years later when they came back to like Bride of Chucky, it seemed like, okay, here's something's kind of different. Ever since then, I mean, then they added like Child. Was it called Child Spawn of Chucky? Child of Chucky?
I think it was Spawn of Chucky the name of the movie.
And then later they had
Glenda.
Yeah. And then later, yeah, there was Curse of Chucky. They became so formulaic, and to me, they were just making a movie for the sake of making a Chucky movie to have the doll exist to terrorize and kill people. It just was not interesting in a way.
That's fair.
I would agree with
those movies being something I don't terribly enjoy. Those specific ones. But I guess continue. Sorry.
That's okay. I think it would just be that, like, maybe, like, an episodic TV format might be a good fit for it.
Okay. To try and draw you in, some of the stars of the show, do you remember the guy who played Andy in the first few films? Two films, I guess? The kid who played Andy?
The kid, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, he's one of the people that is a star for the show. In okay. Child's Play 2, I don't remember the actress's name, but she's the blonde and that plays the babysitter in Child's okay. Play 2. She's back for this series. They are not main characters. The main characters are built around three new, you know, teenagers that are there for the show. Like, it's new people that Chucky's terrorizing, basically.
Okay.
But there was a lot of callbacks, and I believe Brad Dourif's daughter, I'd have to look it up, I believe her name's Fiona Dourif.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She is one of the stars of the show, one of the major stars. She's not one of the teenagers. It kind of follows a little bit of a split storyline, where, like, there's the three teenagers, and then there's Fiona Dourif's character that it follows as, like, the major mm-hmm. plot points in both season one and two. They're somewhat interconnected, but they don't really interact a lot, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Without yep. getting into why or how or anything. And it is... I'm trying to think of a good way to put it. It's not what it has been in the past. Also, okay. Jennifer Tilly is there, of course.
All right.
Playing Tiffany, of course, as she did. And if you remember from the movie, also playing herself as it was. Yeah, I don't know if you remember Bride of Chucky, but they... Chucky's girlfriend, Tiffany, was trapped inside mm-hmm. a doll as well. And she wanted to be Jennifer Tilly. So they kidnapped Jennifer Tilly and moved her soul into Jennifer Tilly and Jennifer Tilly's soul into the doll. That was in Bride of Chucky. That's what had happened. So Jennifer Tilly is back playing Jennifer Tilly and playing Tiffany. So.
Oh, wow. There's a lot there. Okay.
Don't try to think about it too much. If you think... Listen, you're there for the fun Chucky stuff. Like, that's really what this is about. All right. So, yeah, I can't recommend it enough if you enjoy the character. If you don't, there's a chance it could make you enjoy the character.
All right, fair.
Because my wife, Amy, did not care at all for those movies until she watched the show. And then the show made her fall in love with the character. So, take that for what you will. But
that's a pretty glowing... recommendation, way to frame it.
Yeah. Now onto the thing that I don't want to see at all. Continue.
Do you want to take this away?
No, I'll let you do it. You have the planned things to say about it. Like, I'll get into why I don't want to see it when you explain it.
Yeah. All right, so this thing that Mike is really not looking forward to, to be fair, no one is making him watch at all, is
absolutely.
We talked about the Stephen King of it all earlier, and... apparently, someone decided that not enough had been explored about the Pet Cemetery world. And so what appears, I think, to be an attempt at a prequel of Pet Cemetery is coming to Paramount Plus on October the 6th. It looks like it is called Pet Cemetery Bloodlines. Some of the details I have about it are that it is directed by Lindsay Anderson Beer. It is co-written by Beer and Jeff Bueller. What I find interesting is that Lindsay Beer, as a co-writer and director, is also attached, apparently, to some upcoming projects, which might be Disney's attempt at a live-action version of Bambi, a remake or reboot of Short Circuit, the once talked about, who knows what the hell is going to happen with it, Silver Sable movie for Sony, and maybe the next Star Trek feature, all really attached as like Oh, yeah. That's the thing. It's such this mishmash of things as, like, attached as a writer for these other projects. The movie itself stars Henry Thomas, who is the little kid from E.T., but who has since, most recently, I would say, found some resurgence in the Mike Flanagan-led Netflix movies, speaking, or Netflix series, rather, speaking of Fall of the House of Usher. Henry Thomas was in House on Haunted Hill and Bly Manor, and he was a part of, I think, Midnight Mass and the Midnight Club. So he's familiar to faces from there. Samantha Mathis is a part of this, who, if you don't know the name, go look at her resume on IMDb and you'll be like, oh my god, she's been in all these things. Yes, her. And then, kind of surprisingly, David Duchovny and Pam Grier are attached to this film. And it comes out in about 10 days. So a week and a half. It's coming, whether you want it or not. Mike, tell us how much you want it.
Obviously, I don't want it. Let it die. Make something unique and original. And especially with this universe that doesn't need more exploring. This is something, well, I will say that the book was not terrible. Stephen King has written a lot of books, and a lot of them are really, really good. You know, you have The Stand, you have Needful Things, you have It. And then you have a lot of middling books that are kind of okay, like Pet Sematary or Salem's Lot, and you got things that are garbage, like Cujo. And he's done a lot. He has made a lot of books. You're bound to have winners and losers, okay? And there was a time where he took a lot of drugs, and he made a lot of really questionable stuff, and Pet Sematary is part of one of those.
All right.
But it has been... How many movies have been made now? Because you had the first two, you had Edward Furlong one, and then the original, and then you had... The newest
there was
remake.
A remake like 5 years ago, with Jason Clarke.
Right. Was there any others? I can't remember if they tried to do it any other times.
Not sure.
But they've made so three movies then, we'll say. All three have sucked. Let me be clear. They have not made a good Pet Sematary movie. All three of the times, like the first one had that disturbing scene with the kid getting hit by the truck, which is like the scene everybody knows. They even reference it here in the trailer for this with, you know, the semi driving by real fast near a home. Other than that moment, these movies have always been not good. They have it has not produced quality entertainment that I feel like you need to be making more of this. You need to be looking somewhere else if you're looking to bring back an old franchise. This one, you know, it's the dead horse that still has somebody just slamming on it with a bat for no reason at all. Like, just leave it alone. Let it die. He has other stuff. If you're looking for Stephen King, he's got other stuff that is worthy of an attempted remake since we remade this one 5 years ago and again now. But what about the Tommyknockers? Can we try that again instead of another Pet Sematary? The Langoliers. Let's give that one a shot. Why not? I don't need more Pet Sematary ever in my life. I don't.
So on the next episode, Mike may or may not have watched this.
May or may not. I may put myself through that torture. I do like shitty movies, too. So that's where it's like it's... You know, I did watch the one with Jason Clarke, and it was terrible. So, maybe not. But now, Josh is going to tell you about the movie on the list of things coming up that I am most excited for.
And he's surprised that
I am most excited for this one. I see the look on his face. He did not think I was going to say that. But so long as the list is in the order that I thought it would, like the one that
I'm pretty sure it is. And actually, when I came across this, I had no idea that this was about to be a thing, and I'm so happy that I know it exists.
Yes, same.
So also on October the 6th, but this time on Amazon Prime Video, a movie is getting released called Totally Killer.
Fuck yeah.
And if you have seen Ready or Not, if you have seen The Babysitter, either of the Babysitter films or both, hopefully, on Netflix... this is sort of giving me vibes that it might be in that vein. If you've seen Happy Death Day, Happy Death Day to You, things like along those lines, it might potentially be blending like a horror comedy genre in a way where like it's not goofball comedy, but there's just enough to it that it's not pure terror. This movie is directed by Nanochka Khan, who I could see, at least of note, directed a movie called Always Be My Maybe on Netflix a year or two ago with Randall Park and Ali Wong.
Which was not
I loved that movie. I loved that. It was really, really well done. The film Totally Killer is written by David Matalon, Sasha Pearl Raver, and Jen D'Angelo, who I saw was attached. She's one of the co-writers on Hocus Pocus 2 for Disney Plus, which, okay for me. but apparently they're continuing it, and Hocus Pocus 3 is coming along at some point, and she's on board for that as well. So those are your writers. Don't let that dissuade you if it has it all, because here's your cast of note. Kiernan Shipka, who was your Sabrina on, what, four seasons, I think, of the Netflix revival of Sabrina the Teenage
really
Witch.
Really good seasons, too. Like it,
they were.
It's a good show.
Freaking love that show. Julie Bowen, who is playing her mother. Olivia Holt, who is also playing her mother. In the film, you also get Randall Park, who I just mentioned, and Lachlan Monroe. If you don't know who Lachlan Monroe is, again, look up the name. You're like, oh, it's one of those guys. You'll know who he is. I need to read you this synopsis. We don't normally go this in-depth of sharing this much info, but I think this probably both tells you a lot, but doesn't spoil everything. And this whole synopsis that was provided is exactly what I'm guessing is why Mike had the positive reaction he did. So here we go.
Can I try in less words first?
Yeah, go for it, please.
Cool. Marty McFly in Scream.
That is pretty damn good.
That if I had to do it in as few words as I can, that's where I would go. But read the actual one and see how people.
Okay, no, I like it. I like it. And it is actually instead of going back in time 30 years, it's 35 years. But you are really close. That is a good way to think about it, I think. So the synopsis they provide says, 35 years after the shocking murder of three teens, the infamous Sweet 16 killer returns on Halloween night to claim a fourth victim. 17-year-old Jamie, played by Kiernan Shipka, ignores her overprotective mom's warning, her mother being Julie Bowen, and comes face to face with the masked maniac. While on the run for her life, she accidentally time travels to 1987, the year of the original killings. What? That's happening. It goes on to say, forced to navigate the unfamiliar and outrageous culture of the 80s, Jamie teams up with the teen version of her mother, played by Olivia Holt, to take down the killer once and for all in the past before she is stuck there forever. This sounds so fun.
I agree.
I'm super happy. Like, we don't have a long, like, theatrical wait for this. Like I said, yeah. Listeners, by the time you hear this episode, it's almost going to be here.
Yeah, I found out about this episode when you sent me this list. That's when I found out about it. I watched the trailer. I said, holy shit. And then it's like 10 days away. It's like, fucking sweet. and yeah, like the whole like going back in time, interacting with your own mother. It's totally Back to the Future in that reference.
And
then it has the slasher thing going on with teenage. Yeah, I mean, maybe I guess Scream I went with because like less words than
sure.
Evil Dead, or and you know maybe a house or Cabin in the Woods. You know what I mean? Like it's less words. That's why I went Scream. But those are probably more accurate since it looks like you know from the trailer they end up at a cabin in the woods. I am really, really excited for this one.
I am as well. I'm going to be uncharacteristically traveling for work basically the whole week of October 8th, most of that week and a little bit following. So I'm going to be away from home, and so Sarah and I are not going to be able to chew through as much together as we normally do. But since this comes out on the 6th, I have that whole weekend through Monday, because I leave on Tuesday the 10th. So we have that whole four-day weekend to try to digest this, and I'm looking forward to it. This might just be like our Friday night, October the 6th, home movie. Like, work is done, let's make dinner, turn the lights off, put this on.
Yeah, that day I'll be watching this. Like that, I will be watching this on its release day.
That's awesome. Well, we both know where we stand on that. Let's see where we line up on the next one. I normally shy away a little bit from sharing all of these because, as Mike said, with the first entry of It Lives Inside, there's plenty of foreign language film in the world that exists that tackles every genre from zombies to romantic comedy to sci-fi, post-apocalyptic. It runs the gamut, just as American cinema does. This sounded interesting to me. It is a Swedish language film, so buckle in for your subtitles. This is going to be on Netflix on October the 13th, and it is called The Conference. The background of this, it's fairly simple so far. It says, what begins as team-building fun descends into a nightmare as a mysterious masked killer begins stalking and picking off participants. This feels like workplace... Obviously, like workplace comedy is a sort of small subgenre that we're very familiar with, but like workplace horror, not as much. And so I think... It just seems like this could be like, oh, let's go on a retreat. Let's go do our team building and whatnot. And then, uh-oh, look what we just ran into. Like I said, it just sort of seems like it's throwing a curveball. And so, yeah, I chose to bring The Conference into the list. Mike, did you get a chance to review information for this one, this Swedish film?
I did. It looks interesting. The trailer didn't really, like, it set some things up, but I don't feel like from the trailer I was able to, like, get a real feel of, like, what's really going on. And I think that's mm-hmm. a good thing.
Okay.
I don't know what to make of it. You know what I mean? Like, as of yet, was this one, yeah, Netflix.
Yep.
Will I remember to get to it when... resubscribe to Netflix when Stranger Things comes back for the last season? I don't. Maybe I will. Maybe sure. I won't. Because we don't have a date on that yet. We don't know when. We probably next year, but I don't think there's an official Stranger Things season 5 date.
Right. Right.
So am I going to remember? Probably not. But it looks interesting, and if I remember, I will watch it. I guess is the way I would feel about it. It's not going to get me to resubscribe for a month. I guess other way I would put it. So,
yeah, that's fair. So, not a whole lot to go on yet. Like I said, it's Netflix, so there's probably some manner of promotional material out there you can see. But like I said, this I think it might have the ability to put a spin on some things that we don't see that often. And so, yeah, I felt it was worthwhile mentioning. So we've talked about streaming a lot here, right here in the middle. We talked about Paramount Plus, Amazon Prime, and Netflix. But, you know, goddammit, sometimes I just want to get to a theater and be scared with a group of strangers. And other than, until I came across Totally Killer, this next entry was the gem I was looking forward to not only talking about, but when I first heard about it just a couple weeks ago, finally, it lit me up like no tomorrow. Folks, if you've ever seen, I think it was the 2007 film Grindhouse, which was a double feature, one movie called Death Proof, directed by Quentin Tarantino, and the other film, Planet Terror, directed by Robert Rodriguez. And it was a one price ticket, and it was a double feature, a full two full-length movies that if you wanted to piss off after the first one or come in late and watch the second one, I'm sure you could, but you didn't get charged twice for both movies. In between, this is something that has never been done. It was, granted, it was kind of gimmicky, and it was one of the ways that they sold it, you know, to the public, but the whole thing was genius. The callback to the Grindhouse idea was this notion of theaters from the 60s and 70s being, you know, I wouldn't even call them art houses. It was like your local theater that couldn't get real movies well before Cineplexes were the norm and available everywhere. And anything that they could exhibit, you know, a lot of them would just take whatever product maybe that they could show. And then eventually they maybe started to specialize in these low budget films that were horror and probably blaxploitation and sexploitation at times, and just a whole gamut in there. So they took this idea of the Grindhouse, gave you these two movies, but when you went to see it in theaters, there was an intermission of sorts between the two. And there was about 15 minutes, 20 minutes maybe, of fake movie trailers. Trailers for fake movies that were made up, and real short trailers were made for them that weren't ever intended to exist. They were just a joke meant to fill the time for this intermission. Since then, several of these movies have actually been made. Most notably, I would say, is Machete. And actually, two of those got made. There was Machete and Machete Kills. Like, they made a sequel to a movie that was supposed to be a joke. Also that came out of that was Hobo with a Shotgun. I might be missing one. I think that might be it, though. I'd have to go back and look. But here's the point. One of those movies that was maybe, other than, what was the Nicolas Cage one? It was like Werewolf, something about a werewolf that Nicolas Cage was in. That might be the only one that had more buzz than what we're about to talk about at the time. Probably the second highest buzz trailer that has, you know, that was part of that, that people have been clamoring for years for a feature, is finally coming. It got made. It is done. So on November 17th, we are finally getting the Eli Roth written and directed Thanksgiving. And Eli Roth was responsible for the creation of this initial fake trailer with Grindhouse. It looks exactly like you expect it would. It looks like nothing more, nothing less. It stars Patrick Dempsey and Gina Gershon. Good for them. Whether there was anybody I recognized in it or not, I was probably going to see it. but this is going to get my butt in the theater that weekend. Sorry, I just gushed over all that to give the backstory and whatnot, but that's how I feel. So, Mike, the stage is yours.
The backstory is necessary to understand why somebody would be this excited for it. I mean, yes, for me, any Eli Roth horror film, I'm probably going to go and watch, because he understands some things and is willing to go into some places that others aren't. Which brings me, sadly, every time he comes up now, especially with this kind of movie, I have to go back to the fact that he was supposed to direct the original Meg movie. And that didn't happen. Shit. So,
unfortunately, yeah.
However, this, it looks so much fun. It looks like it's going to be, I don't think it has the similar tone to, you know, the Grindhouse movies or anything like that. I don't think that's what we're trying to imply, but it is definitely going to be an Eli Roth slasher type movie from everything I could glean from it. The pilgrim mask on the killer is hilarious, and it's going, I don't know how it's going to play for audiences, for your average audience that, you know, this is one of those times I feel like Brian has said so many times, you know, your average audience doesn't have the knowledge that your dedicated audiences do, where they're kind of in on the jokes and stuff like that. Like, I feel like your average audience is going to have no idea why this movie was made. They're not going to really learn anything from Grindhouse. They're not going to get it. I think it might be hard for them to sell it, but that's why it works as a Thanksgiving movie, because typically that's a pretty good showing that week of Thanksgiving, because people get extra days off.
Yeah.
And you have family around, really... you got kids around, you got to have something to do to occupy people, because you have people in from out of town, and if you just sit around all day, oh, you end up killing each other. What do you know? They have a movie to live that fantasy out, right there for you to go and watch and, you know, relieve some of that tension. At least that's the way I'm thinking of it, and maybe they'll market it that way at some point.
Maybe. And I think it's also good to have, like, this is the same weekend that the new Hunger Games movie comes out, the Hunger Games prequel. Mm-hmm. And so it's good counter programming to that. November is typically not a time when studios take the gamble of putting horror into theaters. And this holiday, if you will, this theme, other than a really, really bad horror movie from like 15 years ago called Thanksgiving, like Evil a turkey. Mainstream, right? Yeah, literally like a killer turkey. A mainstream movie has not been made that quote unquote took it seriously in a horror context. So, I think that might be one thing that also appeals to people. If they start seeing this in, like, through October, they'll probably start seeing this, hopefully, as a trailer to the movies they're going to see. And that'll hopefully, you know, excite some folks, too.
Have they, do you know, like, in relation so far, if they have released the original trailer out as a trailer? Like, the one that was in Grindhouse?
Like, that they're actually using? I mean, you can find it on YouTube, for instance.
No, I don't mean but to rewatch in terms of, are it. They... I mean, like, do you think they'll use it, like, at all, if they haven't?
I doubt it, because while I would love that, the look of it is very... Those trailers, for the listeners, those trailers that were used as a joke were made to look... low budget and aged. So yes. They had purposefully the look of like 70s grainy, scratched, you know, 35mm film. So the look of it is appropriate for that. But if you saw that play in a theater right now, you would wonder what the hell, and not in a good way. This actual version, I think, you know, it looks polished. It looks professional, modern. If you will. It looks updated, modern.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they need to do that, but I'm hoping that somewhere along the way there's an opportunity for the marketing, or maybe through the movie experience in the exhibition, to make people aware of the connection in some way. That would be fun. I hope through this more and more people come to learn the origins of it and really where it came from.
That's fair. I would say I'm in on this as well. Yeah, I mean, those Grindhouse movies were fucking great. And yeah, just the whole idea of it, where Eli Roth making a horror movie about Thanksgiving. Yeah, you got me.
Yeah, that's enough. That's all I need.
Yeah. There is one
anything
I wanted
else?
To mention.
Oh, please.
A different thing that's happening.
Sure.
Not this movie. That we didn't have on the list here.
Okay.
It's not technically a new movie. But it is something that's happening. They said in October it will be released, and that is Werewolf by Night is getting a re-release.
Oh, yes.
Done in the styling of Hammer films from the 70s, so it will be colorized and done in the style of the old Hammer films. Which
is on Disney Plus.
Yes, this will be on Disney Plus. Right, so if you're unfamiliar with those, that would be the those are the Christopher Lee Dracula films that were Hammer, or was it Frank Langella? I believe it was Christopher Lee.
Could be, yeah.
But that's similar old grainy style in the way the lighting worked in the Hammer horror films and the way that the blood was and their contrast and saturation that they used in their editing was different than the norm. So I'm very interested to see a colorized Hammer version of Werewolf by Night, because Werewolf by Night itself was so good.
Having a reason
to go back in and have a somewhat different experience with it, I'm very much looking forward to. I just wanted to make sure we mentioned that because it came up with the Grindhouse thing. I figured it was a good time to squeeze it in there because old styly type stuff to relate to.
Absolutely. We are, I would say, coming in for a landing, but we only have three more projects to discuss with you guys. So we at the moment, have reached the point where we think we have found everything worthwhile that we can confirm that will be out in 2023. I'm sure the industry strikes had a little bit to do with that, but, you know, this is the prime season, and then we kind of look to see what they're going to try to throw at us in the early parts of next year. It looks like 2024 is going to kick off right away on January 5th. With a theatrical movie called Night Swim. Seems pretty straightforward based on the synopsis. It's a feature length of a 2014 short film. And the synopsis is simply, it's about a woman in her pool at night, terrorized by an evil spirit. Mm-hmm. That's what we got. It is being directed and co-written by Bryce McGuire, also co-written by Rod Blackhurst. I probably would have passed this over for mentioning, but then I saw the cast and I see that Wyatt Russell, who has been in a couple of cool things the last few years, namely, in my opinion, Overlord, as well as Falcon and the Winter Soldier. This is going to star Wyatt Russell and Carrie Condon, who I believe Carrie Condon, among other things, she provided the voice for Proxima Midnight in Avengers Infinity War.
Yes. And Wyatt Russell was if you're unfamiliar, was U.S. Agent.
Yes, in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
He was the new Captain America that's not Captain America. He was that guy.
Exactly. Good call. So that's all we really have to go on right now with that. Not a whole lot to say, but Mike, any thoughts?
The short film is out there. It's kind of sweet. I'd give it a watch. See if you like the short film, maybe this will be up your alley. There's not a trailer, there's nothing to go on, but there is a short film that you can go and watch. It's about 3.5-4 minutes, I believe. There's not much there. So extending that into a feature, having watched the short film, I can see how they can do it. So that's what I would say.
Gotcha. And moving on. Second to last is a film that looks like it might be hitting in February called Imaginary, directed by Jeff Wadlow. And the synopsis is that a woman returns to her childhood home to discover the imaginary friend she left behind years ago is very real and unhappy that she abandoned him. This, I think, caught my eye because it felt like Drop Dead Fred goes bad.
Okay.
Like, that was a comedy, bordered on drama at times, but is mainly a comedy. This sort of seems like, oh, you forgot about me? Oh, no, I didn't like that. Now you're an adult. I think this could go interesting ways.
It could. For me, I have not loved the stuff that Wadlow has done, personally.
Fair.
Kick-Ass 2 was okay.
Mm-hmm.
The other things...
which I can name real quick for some people. He directed Cry Wolf, as Mike said, Kick-Ass 2. He also did Truth or Dare, which I think was 2018 or 2019. He did the Fantasy Island remake, reimagining, in 2020, just before COVID.
Yes, that was Lucy Hale and Michael Pena, I believe.
Yep. Yes, it was.
And yeah, that was one that looked good, and it just disappointed me so much. So
fair.
Yeah, and the other ones, like Truth or Dare, same kind of thing. Could have been cool. Mm-hmm. Felt like it fell flat. I've never seen Cry Wolf. And Kick-Ass 2, okay. Again, it's not as good as Kick-Ass, but it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take that. So, like I said, not much to go on. We'll just wait to see if more comes out, but it's on the radar for now. And last but not least, I can say we're coming in for a landing, but I think this is a great place to drop the wheels. Because coming up now, it's almost about the 6-year anniversary of the first time that Mike made me personally aware of a film called A Quiet Place. I remember we were doing our anticipated 2018 list, and he brings this up in the discussion. I never heard of it whatsoever, and it ended up being one of my favorite movies that year. I loved the sequel, and apparently this universe, if you will, is continuing. On March 8th, which seems to be this sweet spot that they're finding for A Quiet Place films. That's pretty much, I think, where they all got released. At least the first one was a March release. You know what? The sequel was supposed to be March of 2020, and it opened. It was supposed to open like the Friday after shutdown.
Yeah, because I remember watching it at home. Because it was one of those movies that like was among the first to get ushered to home viewing really quickly because of COVID. Where they were like, yeah. Oh, we can't put this in theaters. It's already there, kind of. What do we do? And so they kind of pushed it to home faster
right.
at the outset there. So I did watch it at home. I didn't get to see that in theaters, which is a shame because the sound mixing on these movies is one of those things you kind of want a theater for.
It's incredible. So this I don't think this is a sequel or a prequel at all. I think they're kind of, you know, you mentioned Fear the Walking Dead earlier. I think they're kind of going that route where this worldwide phenomenon has happened. There's other stories to tell with other people. So this third installment is called A Quiet Place Day One.
As that I said, makes me feel it's like prequel, but not prequel
well,
to the
I think,
story of the people we know, but a prequel to explain how it all started specifically.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, I think it's gonna look at a different
to be quiet and stuff like that.
A different group of people. Yeah. Whereas I think the first film had like flashbacks of that and showed
pieces.
Moments.
Yeah.
And whatnot. But this whole thing might be yes a bit more of an origin story of the entire film sort of plays out the first couple of days.
Yeah.
And as I said, this is at the moment, slated to come March the 8th, 2024. It is directed by Michael Sarnowski. Most notably, I would say, directed the Nicolas Cage movie Pig from the last few years, one I've still not seen, but I have heard nothing but legitimate rave for.
It's good. It's really good.
Yeah, and I think you're one of them. Yeah, so it's I'm going to get to that eventually. This movie is written by Jeff Nichols. And it's got a pretty good cast, I think. So it stars Lupita Nyong'o, Joseph Quinn. You've been mentioning Stranger Things. This is Eddie Munson. Mm-hmm. Eddie Munson is coming to the Quiet Place universe. It also includes Jimon Hounsou, Alex Wolff, who has been a part of the Jumanji films, and Dennis O'Hare, who I would say, if a quick reference for you guys, he's been in many of the American Horror Story seasons.
One quick correction for you there. It's Lupita. You have it in notes here as Nupita.
I was just typing quickly. Sorry, because her last name starts with the N, and I just... Yep, thank you for correcting that.
When you said it, I was like, oh, wait. And I looked, and I'm like...
Part of me said, like, it doesn't sound right, but I'm not... like, my brain wasn't triggering what part was wrong.
You weren't questioning your own notes. You're like, no.
No, not yet. Yeah. Yeah.
To be fair, it's the only typo you had in the whole thing. So, you know.
Hey, good for me. So, Mike, I mean, you kind of gave some input there, but how do you feel about other sides of this story? Is this a universe you care to see more of? What do you think of the cast? Will that sway anything for you?
The cast seems good. Yeah, I mean, there's nobody in there that I don't enjoy watching. No, yeah, I mean, like, there is certain people that are out there that maybe I don't want to see movies with them in it. but everybody in that cast, I have a fair amount of respect for their talent. Joseph Quinn's not somebody that I've seen in anything but Stranger Things.
Same.
So is his character in Stranger Things what carries him to popularity, the writing for the character and all that? Or does he have something going? I think this is a start to finding that out. Yeah, I mean, this is a chance to see him in something else, not just as Eddie. Which is going to be tough. They need to cut his hair. If he has long hair, I'm just going to see Eddie. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I know for a fact that the Eddie Munson character, that was a wig. But,
oh, yeah. But I mean, like, well, maybe not cut
his hair. They give his character long hair or shaggier hair in A Quiet Place, that's going to be harder to disassociate.
Yeah. But I, as far as the movie goes, we'll see. This is really the first chance we're going to get at something like this in that universe, obviously. And it's the first time we're going to have John Krasinski not involved with the project. And I mean, this was kind of his whole thing. This was his baby, if you will.
Yeah, kind of his brainchild.
So separating him from it because they own the property as a movie, or as, like, you know, the studio that owns it, whatever one does. I don't know which company owns it, but one of them owns it, and they're deciding to continue to make it because the first two were popular with him. I'm always hesitant in that scenario where you're separating the original creator from something. And I want to see more from this. I'm just kind of sad that he's not involved in it for whatever reasons.
He is listed as, he was the director for the first two films. He is still listed as an executive producer on this.
It could be, and I still need my money for you using my property.
Maybe. Perhaps there's, you know, some part of like a small production company that he's involved with that will be, you know, part of the producing studios. Who knows? It could be, a whole series of things like that. But to your point, he's not going to be on screen nor right behind the camera.
Or writing.
So that's a wild card.
Like, and he's not involved in writing it either. Like,
I don't believe so. Yeah, no.
To me, it's one of those things that, like, you have this really awesome idea, and if you're going to this day one scenario, how much of what made those movies unique will you have if essentially, you know, from, again, they're calling it day one, so presumably they're not going to know that they have to be quiet until at least some point in the film.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's going to lose that aesthetic, and how much does this stand up to other alien invasion? I mean, that's the assumption, right? If I remember correctly, they were aliens. So how much does it stand up to other alien invasion type movies? And does the background we have from the first two assist it versus ones that don't? Man, I don't know. I'm hesitantly excited for it, but I also have, obviously, my doubts about it separating the original creator, and it's separating itself thematically from what made the first movies unique.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm going to remain optimistic as well, and but it's going to be on my radar. Like, there's no way I'm not going to see what it does.
Right.
But yeah, just kind of wait with bated breath and take it when it happens.
Yeah, it's like we have this one chance. It's like, if you do this one right, I'll continue watching more if you make them. You fuck this one up, you're going to have to get John back to do anything else for me to be interested. He's going to have to direct and write again for me to watch a fourth if this one isn't good.
Fair. Noted. You're on notice, movie studio. Well, Mike, we have reached the end of the road. That is all we have to share this time around for the Jamboree. So any closing remarks, or we can let the listeners know how to get to us?
get out there and enjoy horror movies, everybody. It's the season for it. It's coming up on Halloween. It's the best season of the year. Step outside. Yeah, it's a little cloudy today. Might not be on the day that it releases. It's Pittsburgh in fall. It'll probably be cloudy the day this releases. But step outside. Enjoy it. Just have the most fun you can during this time of year, whatever it is. If it's not horror, I mean, you're kind of lame, but it's okay. That's fine. We'll forgive it.
I agree. Couldn't have said it better. So with that, we'll try our best to give the typical closing remarks. If you like anything you've heard today or from prior episodes, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on whatever platform you choose to. Intake us. If you're already hearing this, you're obviously getting us from somewhere. If you are aware of this, but we're not somewhere that you can get your podcasts from that you'd like to, reach out and let us know. You can find us on Twitter at, I think it's BG Super Friends. Sounds right. We'll figure it out and correct it if it's not. There's also BryGuySuperFriends@gmail.com, which is the least trafficked email address in Google history. But you guys can change that. Send us thoughts, ideas, topic suggestions, criticism. Let us know what you don't like about us. We'll even take that at this point. Other than that, you can probably find us one way or another if you put a little bit of effort in. We'll leave it to you, though.
Brian says Google, Anchor, Stitch, Spotify, iTunes, all those things.
Well, Stitcher is not a thing anymore.
Oh, all right. So
we're going to have to amend... We're going to have to amend the script, and to be fair, we've been hearing that outro for 8 years, so it's embedded in our brains. But
yeah.
Other than Stitcher, there's many other places you can still get your podcasts. But yeah, other than that, then for myself and for Mike, thank you guys so much. And we, as Brian says, we will talk to you next time.